Okay, back to 1 Kings chapter 9, where we've left off at verse 9. And this also, the end of verse 9 in 1 Kings 9, coincides with the end of 2 Chronicles 7 that we completed our study of last week. So we want to finish up that portion that remains in 1 Kings 9. This is going to parallel 2 Chronicles 8. So the rest of, from verses 10 to 28 of 1 Kings 9, that's going to follow all of 2 Chronicles 8. So we have that to look at next, and then 1 Kings 10 and 2 Chronicles 9 give the account about the Queen of Sheba that comes to hear the wisdom of Solomon. So that's what's coming up here on the horizon, Lord willing. But let's go ahead and start in 1 Kings chapter 9. If we could read verses 10 through 19. Let's see, Brother Glenn, can you look at that for us, please? 10 through 19 of 1 Kings 9.
And it came to pass at the end of 20 years when Solomon had built the two houses, the house of the Lord and the king's house. Now Hiram, the king of Tyre, had furnished Solomon with cedar trees and fir trees and gold according to all his desire. That then King Solomon gave Hiram 20 cities in the land of Galilee. And Hiram came out from Tyre to see the cities with Solomon, which Solomon had given him, and they pleased him not. And he said, What cities are these which thou hast given me, my brother? And he called them in the land of Cable unto this day. And Hiram sent to the king 64 talents of gold. And this is the reason of the levy that King Solomon raised for to build the house of the Lord. And his own house, and Milo, and all of Jerusalem, and Hazor, and Megiddo, and Gezer. Well, Pharaoh, king of Egypt, had gone up and taken Gezer, and burned it with fire, and slain the Canaanites that dwelt in the city, and given it for a present unto his daughter Solomon's wife. And Solomon built Gezer, and Beth Horon the nether, and Baalath, and Tamar, Tadmor in the wilderness in the land, and all the cities of store that Solomon had, and cities for his chariots, and cities for his horsemen, and that which Solomon desired to build in Jerusalem and in Lebanon and in all the land of his dominion.
All right, so starting in verse 10, that tells what happened at the end of 20 years. Well, this would be 20 years of what? Not the end of when Solomon was 20 years old, because he was 30 years old when he became king. So this would be likely marking what time?
Building of the house of the Lord in Solomon's house.
Which started at the beginning of his reign. So this would also happen to be a mark of his reign. So basically at this point when we're we get to this part of the events of Solomon's reign, we're about halfway through his reign. He reigned 40 years. So basically now we're looking at all the things that happened with the first half of his reign, the building of his temple, the building of his palace, all this construction that's going on, and everything else that he's doing. We'll see there's also the building of a navy, all the trade that's taking place, the wealth that's pouring in. So this is all what's going on in the first half of his reign as he's serving the Lord. So it can get a little bit, as we go through the chapters, it can get a little bit difficult to have a sense of time and how where we are in this period of time. So when we see the Queen of Sheba coming, I mean, this is going to be well into King Solomon's reign, really into the back half of it. And then when his heart is turned away from the Lord by his wives, that's definitely going to be towards the latter part of his reign, followed by his repentance before his death. But at any rate, we can see a marking of the time there in verse 10. This is the two houses, the house of the Lord and the king's house. And we'd already seen at the beginning here, when it was talking about the building of the temple, that King Solomon did built the temple first. He built the Lord's house first, which was the obviously the right priority that he had there. So after that, he built his own house. And how long did it take for Solomon to build his own house? 13 years, from back in chapter 7 and verse 1, where he told us that. So this was a lot of work that Solomon was doing over this period of time. But the temple was built first. When we first were looking at that, we looked at the contrast between that and what happened with the Israelites later when they were building the second temple, and they put off the completion of the work on God's house in order to build their own houses when the captives had returned. That problem was addressed in the book of Haggai in chapter 1. They did not have their priorities right, whereas Solomon made sure that the house of the Lord was built first. That was job number one after his reign. Just like job number one for David was to get everything started leading up to that, which encompassed the duration of, or the entirety of David's reign over Israel. And his principal work was trying to fix that problem in Israel where the Ark of the Covenant was not in a permanent location for the Israelites to be able to come and obey all those commandments that God had given to them, since going back to that time with the destruction of the tabernacle in Shiloh. And keep that in mind, and actually we get to touch on that a bit, Lord willing, next hour. But at any rate, now that that problem has been fixed, the temple's finished, it was dedicated, we read all of that, now he's summarizing through the end of that 13 years after the temple was finished that Solomon built his own house. So now it's end of 20 years of all of that work on the house of the Lord and Solomon's own house. And then it tells us in verse 11 that Hiram, the king of Tyre, how he had supplied Solomon with cedar trees and fir trees and gold. This was something we were introduced to Hiram when Solomon was started building the temple, putting all of that together. Kinship that Solomon had with Hiram was actually based on the close tie between Hiram and David before Solomon's time. Because Hiram was ever a lover of David, it told us, and he was one that was seeking the Lord. So he was gladly helping, first David and then Solomon with these materials because of his desire to take part in serving the Lord. He knew what it was for. And when Solomon had written him that letter, I mean, he spelled out exactly what he was accomplishing. The purpose was for this to be enable Israel to serve their God. And Hiram was supportive of that. If he had not been, then what role would he have been allowed to have in the in this work of building the temple? If Hiram had been if he were your typical non-Israelite idol worshiping man, what part would he have been given in building a house to Jehovah? Did God have his people joining together with the wicked and unbelievers and doing his work? No, that's a principle that's been in place all along, that God does not have. What communion does light have with darkness? What fellowship is there between righteousness and wickedness? I mean, there's not. In fact, later on, when that second temple was being built, and those native people that were there then that had been put in place there in Israel, particularly in Samaria by the Assyrians, after they had taken out the 10 tribes and removed the people from the land, they replaced them with an amalgamation of people from different kingdoms that they all put in there in Assyria. by the Assyrians in Samaria, and that's all recorded in 2 Kings 17. But and that's when they were, they all had their own gods from those different nations they were part of. And then one of those priests of Israel of the northern kingdom taught them something about Jehovah to add to their idol worship. Well, that's just what those people in those tribes had been doing while they had been removed from the land. And so they had they just added in the worship of Jehovah in with their idolatrous practices. Of course, God did not approve of that. But that was the birth of what became known as the Samaritans, those people as they were referred to in Christ's time. But those people, and when the second temple was being built after the captives returned, they didn't want the Israelites, any of the Israelites, back. And so when the people from Judah were returning from Babylon, they were trying to block that. And they wanted to hinder the building of the temple, so they offered to take part. Were they given that privilege, those Gentile people with the building of the second temple, to have a part in that work? No, they were not. They were forbidden from having any part in that. Let's just quickly, if we can, turn over to the book of Ezra, to chapter 4. And let's read verses 1 through 3. Ezra chapter 4, verses 1 through 3. Brother Allen, can you read that for us? Ezra chapter 4, verses 1 through 3. No problem. All right, so here's when they made that offer to help. What kind of an offer of help was that? Well, with friends like these, I mean, these were their enemies. So were they really wanting to help? They were wanting an opportunity to get in the inside of that work and to hinder it. But the principle was there that was expressed by Zerubbabel and Joshua, that they had nothing to do in building a house to God. They didn't have any part in that. Well, there was that principle. I mean, the wicked, the unbelievers were not going to be brought in to have a part in this work of the Lord. Well, obviously something's different with Hiram, because he was given part in that work. But as we've already seen, he was one that was seeking God, and so he was, his help was very instrumental, and he wanted to serve the Lord and take part in it, and he was given that opportunity. So he had that relationship first with David, and then it's continued into Solomon's reign, and so Solomon returned, gave 20 cities to Hiram in the land of Galilee. Now, why in Galilee? Why that location? What's Hiram the king? He's the king of what? All right, geographically, where's that and where's Galilee? Does that make sense? I mean, Galilee's in the far north of Israel, and what's above that? I mean, that's where you have Phoenicia and Lebanon, and so it makes sense. I mean, why would he give them 20 cities down in Judah, in territory that was not contiguous with his own? So he gave him 20 towns up in that region of Israel that was that bordered Hiram's territory. So that was the arrangement or the agreement that Solomon had with Hiram, for Hiram to provide all of those goods and materials. And so then Hiram came out from Tyre to inspect those cities that he'd given him, and he didn't care for them. Hiram did not like them, and so in verse 13 he asked, "What cities are these?" And so he was not pleased with what he got. Did that break off the relationship between Hiram and Solomon? Well, what does verse 14 say? He's still sending him gold. So they obviously worked through the problem. But at any rate, then we get to verse 15, and Solomon is raising a levy in Israel. Well, the levy was for what? We don't use the term levy very often. What's the term that we use for it? Tax. So he was taxing the people. And so he taxed the people to raise money for what purpose in verse 15? And his house, and Millo, and the wall of Jerusalem, and Hazor, and Megiddo, and Gezer. So Solomon was building fenced cities, cities of store for his goods, and obviously he was had done all that work on the temple, in his own house. So all this stuff that Solomon was doing for the first half of his reign, he raised taxes on the people to pay for that work to be able to be done. But he summarizes what Solomon was doing for those first 20 years there in verse 15. So he built the temple first, he built his own house, but he's also doing these other works, building the wall of Jerusalem and these other cities that he's building up. Now, one of them, the last one that he mentions at the end of verse 15, the town of Gezer, that town has an interesting history. That was one of those cities in Canaan that was given to the Israelites. I mean, that it goes back to the book of Joshua. The city of Gezer is first mentioned in the book of Joshua in chapters 10 and 12. They cast lots for it in chapter 16, but at any rate, it was given to the tribe of Ephraim, Joshua 21:21. Let's turn to Judges chapter 1 and verse 29 and see what the Ephraimites did with the city of Gezer when they were given that, or what they didn't do. Judges chapter 1 and verse 29. Let's see, Brother Aaron. All right, so this is one of those places, and there were quite a few of them, and this portion of Judges chapter 1 gives, it's really, in a lot of ways, it's a chapter of shame for the various tribes of Israel, as it lists which tribes didn't obey the Lord in driving out the people, all the people from their territories. They had subdued them, they'd conquered all of that, so Joshua gives the record of the conquering of those areas, and then the distribution of the territory by lot to the tribes of Israel. Gezer went to Ephraim, but then Ephraim didn't drive out the inhabitants of this town of Gezer. Well, how long did that problem persist? You know, we read about some of those things in Joshua and Judges, where they did not drive out the inhabitants of their territory, some of these tribes. Then you have the tribe of Dan that just gave up their inheritance and moved lock, stock, and barrel. The whole tribe completely changed locations because they wouldn't drive out the Canaanites that were in their territory. So they were the worst of all, but Gezer was there in Ephraim in central Israel and still had Canaanites in them there in the time of the judges. Well, some of that got taken care of in the days of those judges, but did all of that, or did some of that even persist right down to the time of where we are, to the days of David and now Solomon? Well, yeah. What was the very first act that is recorded that David did when he was king over all Israel? What city did he smite? Yeah, known as Jebus, the capital of the Jebusites. It was full of Jebusites. They were mocking David when he was coming against it. But what a blight on Israel. That was right on the border of Benjamin and Judah's territory. The Brook Kidron that was the border right out. That's right outside the wall, right, Jan? That was the actual boundary between Judah and Benjamin as it was originally given. Well, so there was that border city. What had Benjamin done for all those centuries? They hadn't done anything about the Jebusites there. What about the 40 years when the king of Israel was a Benjamite, Saul? What did Saul the son of Kish do about the Jebusites being there in one of the chief towns in his territory? Nothing. So as soon as David becomes king, what does David do? I mean, it's right there on Judah's doorstep. Was David going to allow that to go on? No, that was the first thing he did, was destroy the Jebusites, got them out and renamed the city, called it the City of David, made that his capital. Well, did he do that work and then say, here, Benjamin, now it's yours, after you've ignored it for 500 years? No, he made that his own city. That, of course, became the capital of Israel. That's where the temple has now been built. So that was David's very first work to have the city that would be Israel's capital, that would be where the temple was going to be built. He brought the Ark of the Covenant there first. The Lord then authorized the building of the temple. Now all that's done. But here's Gezer, this town in Ephraim, now that we're reading about in Solomon's time, and right up until then, those Canaanites that were not driven out by the people of Ephraim that was recorded in Judges 1, who was the one that finally got rid of them? Well, that's what it tells us in verse 16 here in 1 Kings 9. Who killed the Canaanites that were in Gezer? Pharaoh. Now, is there something shameful that it's Pharaoh from Egypt that comes up there into the middle of Israel and destroys the Canaanites that are dwelling in one of Israel's cities in the middle of their own country that they hadn't bothered to do something about for over 500 years? Does something seem out of place with that? Yeah. He drove them out, so did Pharaoh have some control over what was done with it? Yeah, but what does he do with it? He gives it to a present to his daughter that's married Solomon, so it's going to be ultimately, of course, controlled by Solomon as part of his kingdom. But that's why in verse 17, Solomon built Gezer. Which is also at the end of verse 15. So there's the reason why that city particularly was a focus of Solomon. His wife there is the daughter of Pharaoh, he was going to make her place nice, as Pharaoh would expect, the one that actually took charge of it. It's interesting to see that history there, but this is something that's not good. That doesn't speak well of the Israelites, especially of the tribe of Ephraim, was still the situation in Gezer until Pharaoh stepped in there. All right, so Solomon builds it up. Then verse 18, all these cities of store Solomon had, cities for his chariots and cities for his horsemen. What Solomon desired to build in Jerusalem and in Lebanon and all the land of his dominion. So he had special towns that would be the locations for the materials for all the stuff that Solomon was going to be doing in his reign. I mean, when you read Ecclesiastes and he goes through all the things that he built and made, I mean, how busy was Solomon? I mean, we just have a synopsis of that we can see here in this chapter of these things that Solomon did. But, I mean, Solomon mentions that in Ecclesiastes, but, I mean, he was a very busy man. He had many, many projects going on. He was doing all kinds of things, building things, increasing his possessions. And all this, at the end, when he lists all of that, what's he going to conclude about it once it's all said and done? What is it, Peter? Vanity and vexation of spirit. What's he going to conclude is the whole duty of man? Fear God and keep His commandments. That's not vanity and vexation of spirit, but all these cities and all these, this pile of gold and silver and all these goods and all these beautiful things that Solomon possessed and made. As we read about, he's building a navy that's going to go ply the Mediterranean to all kinds of places. All these exotic animals come into his... I mean, Solomon's got a nice zoo. But anyway, all these things are coming in. He's got it all. I mean, you can imagine it. He had it. So he had everything. He experienced everything. But this is really describing that process of how all this was taking place. He's busy doing all these things. He's letting the people to do that. And he's going to give a little bit more detail about that starting in verse 20. So if we can... read now. Well, let's go ahead and read 20 through 28. Brother Samuel. So, there in verse 20, Gezer wasn't the only place in Israel that still had some Canaanites in it. What did Solomon do with them? Now, Solomon's already doing some of the things that God warned them about when they demanded a king. You remember back there in 1 Samuel chapter 8, when they wanted a king like all the nations around them, and then through Samuel the prophet, God told the Israelites the manner of a king and the things that he would do, including raise taxes on him for all of his projects and for his own possessions. And then he said he would take of your sons and daughters and make servants out of them. Well, some of these things Solomon is doing, I mean, we read about the levy that he placed on the land. So they're paying taxes now for those things. Any record of Israel doing that? I mean, did any of the judges, were they levying taxes on the people so that the judges could build palaces and all kinds of things? No, that wasn't happening then, but now it is, and that's what God told them. But Solomon is not going the full distance of the things that that the kings would do. I mean, some of these things, of course, Saul had done before him. But instead of making bondmen of his own people, what does Solomon do with the remnants of those Canaanite people that are scattered in various towns among the tribes of Israel? Well, he's got all those materials, got all these projects going on. Who's going to do the work? Who are the grunts? I mean, who's going to be doing that hard labor? That's right. So he makes those people into the bond servants to do the work. So they're not having a very pleasant life here. But should they? I mean, here they are in Israel's land. So Solomon says, "Okay, well, here's what you're going to do." So he makes them into his servants to do the work, and he's got all of these captains and rulers over his and princes over all these things and works that he's doing. These officers and so it describes the organization that he's got for all of this in verses 22 and 23. So there's just we really are mentioned several of these things Solomon was doing and the fact that he had all this organized. But, I mean, if all of this were actually spelled out in all of its details, I mean, can you imagine what all was going on in Israel for this all these years? I mean, this is half of Solomon's reign up to here. And there's more to come, but I mean, it just what was going on there. I mean, it was with all the wealth that was pouring in that Solomon had. What would that land have looked like in this time? I mean, probably just about everywhere you'd go, you'd be seeing stuff being built. I mean, were they seeing their country changing? It was becoming immensely wealthy right before their eyes. So. All this going on in Solomon's reign. Well, he built Gezer for Pharaoh's daughter. So when he builds that, obviously has built her a very nice palace there. So she'd been in Jerusalem where Solomon was. So now that she's got her own palace there in Gezer in the land of Ephraim, verse 24, what does she do? So now he's got one of his principal wives up there in her own place. Well, as we'll see, that doesn't mean Solomon's going to be lonely now. at any rate, Pharaoh's daughter takes her place there in Gezer there in Ephraim. So then he built Millo, and it tells us in verse 25... three times a year, Solomon offered burnt offerings and peace offerings on the altar that he had built to the Lord. This is at the temple. And he burned incense there on that altar before the Lord. Now when it says he did, I mean, was he taking the role of the priest himself? No, it was talking about his, what he was bringing as an offering. There to Jerusalem, to the Lord's altar three times a year. Well, what three times would that be? In order, the very first, well, how was Israel's calendar organized? I mean, God was the one that organized it for them and had them appoint for the first month of their year the month that they came out of Egypt. Remember that? Back in Exodus. So the birth of their nation as an independent nation was when they, the Exodus from Egypt, and that's when God had their calendar to start. And what feast went along with that? The 15th day of the first month every year. The Passover, when the Lord passed over their houses and destroyed all the firstborn in Egypt, which is what led to their exodus from Egypt. So the Passover feast was the first one in the year, right there at the beginning of the year, every year. And then what happened 7 weeks later, which is why it's called the Feast of Weeks, or using Roman terminology, when you have 7 days and then it would be the day after, 7 weeks plus a day, 50, Pentecost. So you'd have the Feast of Weeks or the Day of Pentecost, and that would come 7 weeks following the Passover feast. And so that was the second one. And then there was the later on in the seventh month of the year, they had the Feast of Tabernacles. So you had those three feast days in Israel, and God commanded all the Israelites to come to Jerusalem those three times a year to obey these commandments. So it's telling us that Solomon was obeying those commandments of God. So he was doing what God commanded all of them to do for those three times a year. That's also noteworthy because for about a century in Israel, before the temple was completed, which we just had the dedication of, I mean, after the Ark of the Covenant was taken by the Philistines and the tabernacle at Shiloh was destroyed, what place did the Israelites go to three times in a year for those feasts? Well, there was no altar. There was no tabernacle or temple. There was no place for the Ark of the Covenant and the most holy place with an altar of the Lord there. None of that for what the children of Israel could obey. So, I mean, you had about 100 years in their history where they couldn't do that. And that was the reason that was so urgent in David's mind, was it was such an urgent matter for him to fix that. I mean, this was a huge spiritual problem in Israel because of that. So, well, now that's fixed. So we can see how the fruits or the results of having the temple completed. Now all Israel is, they're all obeying those commandments for those feasts in the year, and Solomon himself is observing that. So that's just illustrating what was able to be accomplished now that temple was done. And so then after that, in those last three verses of 1 Kings chapter 9, Solomon made a navy. He made a navy of ships where? Ezion-Geber. Where was that? Yeah, so it's on the coast there. Down there at the Red Sea in the land of Edom. So he's got ships down there. So that's going to enable trade with... Well, we're going to read about the Queen of Sheba in the next chapter. And where was that kingdom located? That was way down on the southern tip of the Arabian Peninsula. So you have kingdoms that are there in Arabia, well south of all that territory to the south, where Saudi Arabia is today, and Yemen and places like that. But you have all those kingdoms, principalities there in Arabia. Well, having ships there on the Red Sea enables trade with all of those, as well as what's on the west side of the Red Sea. Well, you got Egypt and Ethiopia. I mean, you there's some very prosperous kingdoms on either side of the Red Sea. Solomon's going to have access to all that. So here he's got these vessels, and that's going to be... I mean, is this primarily for warfare that he's building all these ships for, or is this for trade? I mean, his enemies are subdued, so Solomon's not engaged in warfare at this time. Hiram is the one that supplies the the people, the sailors for his ships. Why would he be a good one to do that? Yeah, he's on the Mediterranean coast in Tyre. And we know with that relationship with Hiram, I mean, you got all those ships of Tyre that are plying the Mediterranean going everywhere, and they're bringing goods back. So Solomon, with his alliance with Hiram, I mean, that gives him all that gold and everything that's pouring in through all those ships from Tyre. But, I mean, what was Tyre's main function? I mean, what did they do? I mean, you had Tyre and Sidon, those seaports. I mean, their whole business was trade. And so that's what they did. And so who had more experience people in that than Hiram would have? So he had lots of experts in sailing. That's what they did. That's what his people, they were engaged in. What else did they have to do? I mean, that was it. So he could supply plenty of experts in sailing there. Well, the Red Sea, I mean, that was something that was not accessible to Hiram, but he's providing. Do you think Hiram benefited from any of the trade on the Red Sea with these ships that he's providing the sailors for? I mean, you can see a lot the mutual benefit with this alliance that Solomon has with Hiram. So, I mean, Hiram gets a benefit from the shipping on the Red Sea that doesn't border his territory, whereas Solomon is going to benefit greatly from the trade through the Mediterranean with ships going out of Tyre. This was a very good relationship that he had with Hiram there. You can read about the gold that they got from Ophir that came in, brought to King Solomon as a result of this. Now, this is not going to be the last time we read about one of the kings of Israel that is building ships at this place for this purpose. Does anybody remember another one later? How about Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, in 2 Chronicles chapter 20? Verses 35 through 37. So it's kind of interesting just to see the historical connection here with this region. 2 Chronicles 20, 35 through 37, with Travis. So Jehoshaphat attempted to do what Solomon was doing, and it failed. And what was the reason? Because, and this is another way we can tell that Hiram was one that was seeking the Lord, because Solomon joined with Hiram, and there was a joint venture there. Well, Jehoshaphat attempted a joint venture with the king of the northern kingdom of Israel, Ahaziah. Ahaziah was Ahab's son, his second son after Jehoram. Well, Jehoshaphat had married his son to the daughter of Ahab, to Athaliah. So he was now in-laws with the house of Ahab, and that was not for his good. That's why he had joined with Ahab to go up to Ramoth and Gilead to try to help Ahab recover Gilead from the Syrians. Well, God had punished Ahab by giving Gilead to the Syrians. And when he tried to join himself there, the Lord saved him, but sent a prophet to rebuke him for joining with the ungodly. So here's that principle again. The righteous don't join together with the wicked to do works. Jehoshaphat, well, he didn't learn his lesson from that. But then he builds goes into a venture to build ships with Ahaziah, Ahab's son. Well, wicked man. So what does God do with the... Did God bless the work? He broke their ships. So, didn't work. Failure. I mean, and if this were something that Solomon shouldn't have been doing with... If Hiram had been a wicked man, do you think God would have broken his ships? He could have broken those ships, obviously. But there's a difference between Hiram and... Which is also sad because Hiram is not an Israelite. So we can see Israelites with Ahab and Ahaziah that God rejected. But here's a man that's not an Israelite, but he's seeking the Lord and God accepts. So is God a respecter of faces or hearts? Hearts. Anyway, that's what happens there through the end of 1 Kings chapter 9. Lord willing, next week we'll look at the parallel to what we just covered there. We can have an opportunity to pick up a few more of the highlights in there that we may not have covered in full detail this time. But we'll, Lord willing, look at 2 Chronicles and chapter 8 next time. I guess that would be in 2 weeks, Lord willing, right? Because we have the foundations class next week.